yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Thank you, Kalai King. I am Dan Dunn, and what we're drinking on this episode is Casa Dragoni's Barrel Blend. It's a brand new Añejo tequila from one of my favorite producers. Coming up in just a few minutes, I'm going to enjoy some of this sweet, sweet nectar with Everybody Loves Raymond creator and Somebody Feed Phil star Phil Rosenthal. Also joining us, Emmy-nominated comedian, writer, Tom Caltabiano, regular guests on the show. I'll also be talking with Berta Gonzalez Nieves, who co-founded Casa Dragoni's, along with MTV creator and iHeart Media CEO Robert Pittman. So we're going to be packing lots of tequila info into this episode. I hope you're ready. Case in point, there's no question we're living through a golden age for agave spirit lovers. At any decent liquor shop, you're likely to have as many as 40 different high-quality craft tequilas and mezcals to choose from. Wind the clock back just 20 years, though, and you'd be looking at two or three lonely products, often larded with caramel color, non-agave filler ingredients. So how do we go from there to here? Tequila and mezcal are both distilled from agave, a giant starchy plant that grows in the desert soil of Mexico. For thousands of years, the native population of Mexico used agave to brew pulque, which is a fermented beverage with the approximate strength of beer. Recent evidence has shown that certain native groups may have figured out how to distill pulque into something stronger in the pre-Columbian period, but the real explosion of distilling came in the 1500s after Spanish colonists arrived bearing advanced tools and techniques. Over the following centuries, production of vino mezcal, as distilled agave spirits were referred to for most of their existence, they thrived, primarily through small-scale, homegrown production. Farmers made the stuff for themselves, their families, and friends, and sometimes traded it with their neighbors. By the 1700s, some larger-scale commercial operations had hatched, including one belonging to a young man named José Antonio Cuervo, the first official licensed producer of mezcal. By the 1780s, Cuervo was producing 800,000 liters a year until 1785, when the operation was unceremoniously shut down by Charles III of Spain, who banned production of mezcal and pulque in Mexico in what was a misguided attempt to stimulate imports of Spanish wine and brandy. Didn't happen. What did happen was the ban drove mezcal production underground, literally. To hide their production from law enforcement, local farmers took to digging holes in which to bake their agave before fermentation. The trapped wood smoke from the underground baking process imparted those smoky flavors we associate with today's mezcal. 10 years later, Spain realized it could make more money taxing mezcal than banning it and lifted their production prohibition. The first guy in line for a post-prohibition license was José María Guadalupe Cuervo, José Antonio Cuervo's son. The Cuervos fired up the stills again, which is to say they tried to make it look like they hadn't been producing black market hooch for the past decade. And the modern age of tequila production began in earnest. In 1800, distillers started experimenting with aging tequila in wood, leading to the Reposado and Añejo styles we enjoy today. Americans first learned about mezcal and tequila the same way this great nation learns about most things, through war. In 1821, Mexico won its independence from Spain. Then in 1836, a bunch of folks in what was then northern Mexico decided they should have their own country too. Santa Anna sent an army to put down the Texas Rebellion, and things got ugly. Remember the Alamo? In any case, as Mexican troops streamed north to fight, they brought a steady supply of their beloved mezcal, some of which inevitably ended up in the hands of Texan soldiers who 10 years later would start calling themselves Americans. As the 1800s progressed, many mezcaleros in the Jalisco region began to differentiate their production style from others by using above-ground ovens that didn't impart those smoky flavors in the baking process. In 1870, several of the major producers of this smoke-free style petitioned the Mexican government to allow them to name the spirit after a dusty little town in the heart of Jalisco, you guessed it, tequila. This boss branding move, combined with the expansion of the railroads during this period, primed the pump for tequila to outshine mezcal for the following century. In 1873, the first barrels of tequila were exported to the United States, and in 1893, Cenobio Sousa took his, quote, mezcal brandy to Chicago's World Fair, where he won an award, further boosting tequila's popularity. When U.S. Prohibition rolled around in the 1920s, it inspired a lively black market trade over the southern border, not unlike the whiskey bootlegging operation out of Canada. For most of the 20th century, the Cuervo, Sousa, and Herradura brands dominated the U.S. market with decent, if unexciting, products, and the invention of the frozen margarita earned tequila a reputation as the scourge of college students everywhere. It's a time of relative stability. Then in the 1990s, it all went plum loco. The premium tequila market really started to emerge with the introduction of Patron in 1989. Had a premium look and feel at a time when we hadn't seen much of that in the tequila category. Suddenly, tequila was cool, and people were willing to pay for that style and image. Remember all those local farm producers from back in the 1500s? Turns out they never stopped making tequila. They just didn't have the wherewithal to get it into the U.S. Over the last 35, 40 years, however, inspired by the rampant success of Patron, smaller producers have been trying to crack the U.S. market. Brands like El Tesoro, Tequila Ocho, Fortaleza, Siete Leguas finding similar success, all of which has paved the way for Mexico's OG spirit, mezcal, to make a comeback. To understand the difference between tequila and mezcal might help to think of them like the liquors of the British Isles. Tequila is more like gin, clean, refined, and consistent. Mezcal, on the other hand, is more like scotch. Smoky, funky, unpredictable, and made by a host of highly idiosyncratic producers. Over the past decade, there's been a massive rise in quality mezcal available stateside. Brands such as Del Maguey, Vago, Coque el Mezcal, and El Jorjorio leading the way. These days, there are so many new mezcals on the market, it can be hard to keep up, even for people who follow this stuff professionally like yours truly. If you want my advice, don't worry about becoming an expert. Just dive into the deep end. If you haven't sampled the new wave of high-end tequilas, see what all the fuss is about by picking up a bottle of, say, the new Casa Dragones Barrel Blend. To understand what aging does to tequila, taste the Blanco, then the Reposado, which is aged 3 to 12 months, and then Añejo, anything over 1 year age. Taste versions of the same tequila side by side. Trust me, it'll make you feel good. And with that, let's move on to our first interview. Joining me now via Zoom, my preferred method of communication these days, two fine gentlemen who have been on this show on several occasions, always great having them. The first guy is a comedian, creator, actor, I don't know, is he an actor? I don't know, he writes, stuff like that, Emmy-nominated writer, Mr. Tom Caltabiano. How are you, Tom?
I'm very good. I don't know what to add to that list, Phil. Yeah, but
the applause is deafening.
It is, it's deafening. And then the other guy who's getting the deafening applause is the host of the wildly popular Netflix series, which has just released the third season, brand new season, Somebody Feed Phil, Mr. Phil Rosenthal. How are you, Phil?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, it's nice to be in the kitchen.
It's good to see both of you.
I haven't been in the kitchen all day.
No, you got a, that's a lovely kitchen you've got going on there.
It really is.
Pots, pottery in the background. Did you spin those pots yourself? Did you put them on the something thingy thing?
Nothing in my life is done by me myself.
That's not true. You created Everybody Loves Raymond.
I had help.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to say this straight up. I spent last night watching several episodes of the new season of Somebody Feed Phil, including one from Seoul, South Korea, where that Tom
is. Binged?
I binged, and Tom is in that episode as well. I can tell you this. I love the show. You know this. I've been a big fan of the show the first two seasons. But watching it now was a bittersweet experience because the first thought is, my God, this all looks so phenomenal. I have to plan a trip. So I watched Chicago, I watched London, and I watched Seoul. And I thought, I want to go there. And that's what people do when they watch these shows, is I want to go to that place that Phil took me to, and I want to try that. And everything looks so delicious. My mouth was watering, followed by the thought of, when the hell am I ever going to get to be able to go there? And will the place still, will these, half these places still be there when this is over? Do you have that at all, Phil? Like, do you worry that some of these places?
I've been asked this a lot. What's it like to drop this show in the middle of a pandemic? And obviously I have the same thoughts watching it now. Oh, look how the world used to be. Look how phenomenal it was. Look what we even took for granted. And that's part of it. Of course, I understand that. But what we're forgetting, because we're in the middle of this tragedy, really, is that this will end. And the reason I'm confident in saying that is only because it's ended every other time it's happened in human history, right? And the world will be there waiting for us. The world is not blowing up. This is a disease that's passing through, and it's doing terrible things, but it will pass. And the moment we all have a reliable vaccine, which may be a year away, we're going to feel comfortable, and we're going to feel like, oh, the world is ours again. So I want people to watch the show, not feeling melancholy about how things used to be, but the way they always watch the show, which is, oh, that looks great. Let's plan a trip to go there. As a matter of fact, you have time now to plan. So plan. Life is all about having something to look forward to, right?
There's a scene in the Chicago where you go and you get right in the top of the Chicago episode where you get this sandwich. What was that sandwich? And the guy like sticks his face in it. It looked like the greatest thing ever.
It's the biggest bite I've ever seen a human being take. Is this guy from Al's Beef in Chicago. Those of you who've ever been there know what I'm talking about. This is the heaviest, soggiest, biggest hero sandwich of just wet, sloppy beef in a soaked roll. And this guy just, I think he took half of it in his mouth. It was so shocking. I'm rarely surprised with food anymore, but this was amazing.
How do you, we have talked about this before, but it still amazes me, Phil, is how do you pace yourself on these trips? Because you're eating, it just looks like such prodigious amounts of food. And especially when you were in Chicago, and you alluded to that several times in the episode, that you hadn't had a vegetable since you got there. How do you do it? How do you keep your body from breaking down?
There's a few things. One is, you know how they make a dog food commercial? They don't feed the dog until the commercial. So I'm the dog. I'm not eating until it's time to do the scene, right? Because why would I do that? It doesn't make sense. I want to be happy when the food comes. I want to be excited and enthusiastic. That's all I got going for me, is that. So that's everything. And then we keep it to one or two scenes per day. You're seeing a week's worth of shooting condensed into less than an hour. The other thing is, I have a crew of 16 guys looking at me with their tongues hanging out, and I share almost every single thing I eat with them. I don't finish anything.
There's a great scene in Chicago where you get the deep dish pizza, and Phil just starts saying, get in here. And you see the whole crew, you know, they've got their headsets on. They're just coming in and getting the pizza. And it just, man.
Well, deep dish is such a thing where you, I don't know if you're like me, but I mean, half a slice, what they call a slice. That's, see, you're done. Yeah. And they brought over four of these pizzas, whole pizzas.
Unbelievable. Do you have a... Do you have a favorite place on the new season? Do you have a, there's five episodes, right?
Yes. I think the most exotic, I love everywhere we go. Let me just say that. And I that's not just baloney. I truly am in love with every place, and I fall in love with every place because I'm going to the best places. I'm going to the best things to do in that. I'm seeing it in the most idealized, perfect way. And yet, this is completely accessible to anyone who goes. You just have to know where to go. So the public service part of my show is I'm showing you where to go. And it's not because I'm some genius. It's because I'm asking the experts.
Oh, you usually have a handler there. You had a guy when you were in Seoul. Well, you had Tom, and that's a disaster with Tom in there.
But Tom knew where some of the places were that we'd been. Right, Tom? You knew.
I've been
to a couple of them.
I'd been to Korea, I think, 6 times by the time of the show. And so what Dan's referring to is Aaron the Fixer. That's where you have a fixer in every country who is kind of the advanced person. And then you had your own, Phil, your own knowledgeable Korean chef guy who went as well.
It was the thing I thought was interesting that I really wanted to try. The one that got me was the Army soup you guys had?
Army soup.
So tell us a little bit about that.
This was developed by the Korean Army, I think, after the war, maybe, or during the war, when rations were low, and they just took any meat, anything really, and threw it in a pot.
From American GIs. And what's interesting is the guy Key, who's in there, Dan, is from Philadelphia, but his mother is from North Korea, his father's from South Korea. And so he knew that soup from America. Phil, I had never heard of that soup before. Yeah, and the irony is Phil lives next to Koreatown, but we had to fly 5,000 miles to find out that there's Army soup a block away.
There were a few of those things where I live next door to Koreatown, which is the largest Korean population in the world outside of Korea. And I didn't know some of these dishes. Why? Because I'm not Korean and I don't know. I only know the things that are, you know, that I'm exposed to. So one of the great things about traveling, especially if you love a cuisine, is you're going to the source. You're going to find, and you're going to have not only the best versions of the things you know, but all the undiscovered stuff that you never knew existed. So this tteokbokki, right? This beautiful dish of the rice cakes that I have with Irene Kim. I came back. I didn't even come back. I went on Google, and I searched for tteokbokki in Los Angeles, and of course, it's right by my house. I can
get it. Yeah.
You could have saved so much in airfare, Phil. So much in airfare.
I think it's the exotic part of it, because I'm now that I'm reviewing it, I think the Seoul episode was the one that really got me, because there was also a moment in there where you got the biggest crab that I've ever seen.
Oh.
And they make this crab, and you said that the crab leg looked like a steak, which is true, but then they made a crab fried rice out of the
in the shell. Yeah.
And you, the expression on your face said it all, that was one of the best things you'd ever had.
The whole package, right? I mean, you go into basically an aquarium and you get to pick things out of the aquarium to eat. And so we, you know, it's the show. So I say, what's your biggest crab? And they give it to me, and it's gigantic. And I've heard about restaurants where that crab or something close to it would be $800 if you wanted a crab like that here in America. In this seafood market in Korea, the biggest one there, this crab was $200. And not only that, that included the preparation of the crab in a restaurant upstairs. And they prepare it any way you like it. We wanted it simply steamed and then with the scissors and the you know, the nutcrackers and then the sauces to dip. And then they take the big main shell and the guts of the crab, the fat of the crab. They mix it with rice and make a fried rice. They season it. That whole dinner could feed 8 people for $200. So this is not a, you know, even a luxury item, right? It is for us, but that's dinner for 8. And man, it was easily one of the best seafood dishes I've ever had in my life.
The joy was written all over your face. Speaking of luxury items and putting things into your body, this show, of course, Phil, is what we're drinking. Not what we're eating.
It is?
Yes. And so as a special surprise, and Tom, I feel bad now because I really do feel bad because Phil and I both have a bottle each of the brand new Casa Dragones barrel blend Añejo tequila. It's Casa Dragones' first Añejo tequila, hot off the presses. It's coming out this week. I got a bottle for Phil. I got a bottle for me. Tom, we will describe it to you in great detail.
You know what?
What this tastes
Dan,
like.
Dan, I'll play the part of the audience who's watching the show with nothing to drink.
Yeah. Okay.
So. Let me just say this before we begin, Dan.
Yes.
Ha ha, Tom.
Oh, Tom, see this? See it? Oh, you.
Wow. Now, what's so special about one, Dan?
Did you taste it already, Dan?
I have not, Phil. No, I was waiting for you.
Yeah. Here I am. Here I go.
I'm gonna wait for you. And while
first of all, come on, people. The presentation is
wow.
That good?
Yeah,
I mean, when it comes in a black bottle, you got to have confidence, right?
Yeah.
It's like a right.
Look at that. Fits right in.
By
there.
The way, I happen to love Casa Dragones anyway. Tell us about a little bit about where they come from, their history, and what they correct me if I'm wrong. Their other tequila, even their añejos, they don't have any color, right?
No, this one. Well, you can see this one has a tiny bit of color from the barrel.
Yeah.
You can see it there. I mean,
yeah.
I would say this is probably. It looks like a apple juice, maybe, possibly.
By the way, I should say that. Tequila is Phil's favorite spirit also. So he's not just saying this is one of the things that I enjoy occasionally. Phil drinks about a bottle a night, I think. So he's an expert on tequila. So you're
I want a glass like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is the kind of glass you want to do here. So, so the glass, this is a tequila sipping glass I have. If you want to watch it on the on Instagram at the Imbiber, you'll see what I'm drinking out of here. Let me tell you a little bit about this specific tequila. It's just coming out now in June. It's 100% blue agave. Of course, this Casa Dragones just celebrated its 10-year anniversary, a very high-end producer of tequila. Their portfolio up to now featured a Joven, which is young, and a Blanco, tequila, which is a silver, anything aged under 2 months in barrel, usually no age at all, no barrel at all on a Blanco tequila. So this one here is aged in two types of oak barrels. You got some French oak and American oak. So they blend these two styles together. It's a very agave forward tequila. I want to see what Phil's thoughts are on it. He did bring up the smoked gray glass. It's like a perfume style bottle, would you say, Phil?
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a dark, you know, it looks black to me, but maybe it's a little smoked glass.
So we'll take a little nose on this one, and let's see. Tom, how are you feeling right
describe
now?
Describe it. Yeah, I have a cup
if
of
I'm
coffee.
Doing it, it's going to be a big nose.
Oh, man. That's good.
Did you taste it?
I just did, yeah.
Oh, here I go.
All right, let's see.
Drum roll.
Phil, go.
There's, you know, certain tequilas, it's just something you know immediately. If it burns the back of your throat, that's a sign that, oh, maybe this one is not for me. Other people may like some of that roughness. I do not. There were certain very famous tequilas that have that burn that I think are just, you know, why aren't I just drinking lighter fluid? But this is a very mellow and beautiful thing. And it has zero burn.
Zero burn.
Beautiful taste.
I see the slogan, zero burn. Yeah.
Zero burn.
There's a little bit of chocolate notes and then some fig, I think, and a little, are you getting any of that spice on this?
Yes.
I get a little bit of spice. This is an añejo tequila. So everybody knows, you know, again, I mentioned Blanco, silver. That means anything 2 months or less, but generally it's going to have no barrel aging, okay? And then a reposado, which means rested, is any tequila that's put in the barrel between 2 months and 1 year. Anything over that is an añejo, which means aged. Now, they also created years ago the extra añejo category, which I think is 3 years. I think it's 3 years or more, extra añejo.
Right.
Yeah, and then, but, so it's something like this, I think, is meant to be sipped. It's not something you're going to do in a cocktail, no. Although I did see that they had a recipe. I think it was somebody from PDT in New York, and you guys have been there, right, PDT? It's a speakeasy in New York. I think they're doing something with this that they're going to put on the menu, which is an old fashioned made with that. And that's something you can do. You can always experiment. There's certain whiskey drinks that will work with aged spirits, other spirits like a tequila or an aged rum. And old fashioned would be the one, I think, particularly that you can do this. I'd like to try this in an old fashioned, although it's a little lighter, which is good. It's a
very fine, it's very refined and very fine spirit that you want to just sip. I don't know that I would waste it by putting it in a mixed drink.
What is it about? Because I've seen, even on one of the episodes that I was watching last night, Phil, you ordered tequila. Oh, you were in Chicago. And you said, do you have any tequila? I know you love tequila. We've done tequila. What is it that you love about tequila?
Well, Tom knows that when we were working on the show, at the end of every taping, we would celebrate with scotch. And we got very into scotch and single malt. And we even joined a little club, the Single Malt Society. And they would have a once a year thing where men would go just go around a convention hall and drink every scotch that they had. You must have been to these things.
Phil just wanted it for the skirts, by the way. He wanted to wear it.
Yes, yes.
And I got very into it, and I had never had a great tequila. And when I did, it kind of changed my life because the best ones, I think, are like very fine whiskeys. And I think that the granddaddy for me was I'm sure I'm not alone, the Don Julio 1942.
Sure.
But that is almost a sugar bomb next to this.
You're right. This, again, is very subtle. And just so you know, Casa Dragones, when you go to the Jalisco, which is the state in Mexico where the overwhelming majority of tequila, it's mandated by the government that it's got to be. There are a couple of places outside of Jalisco where they can legally make tequila, but Jalisco is where the bulk, just like the bulk of bourbon is made in Kentucky. It doesn't have to be, but it is. So this one, Casa Dragones, is located near the town of Tequila, which is about an hour and a half to 2 hours west of Guadalajara. Then you have, if you go east, you've got your Highland tequilas. You go about an hour and a half, 2 hours east. So this one is, but just delicious, subtle. It's a breakfast tequila, obviously, because that's when we're recording this right now.
Breakfast tequila. That's only an alcoholic would say.
I said to Tom when we were setting up the interview, I said, "Are you sure you want to do it this early?" Phil's ready. Yeah, right into his lunch.
True, because I didn't really have an apple today so far, and I've had three sips, and I'm like, "Ooh, I'm really a lightweight." But this is a very fine. Are we allowed to tell the people what this costs? This particular bottle.
We are, and this bottle costs $150. Yeah, $150. It is
worth it.
Yeah,
worth it. This is a very fine spirit, people. This is very nice.
You've got to have your high end stuff in any home bar, and I think the same goes with the tequila. And Phil mentioned the Don Julio, and a lot of people have that. But something like this, I think, is a little bit more impressive because it's not as many people know about it. First of all, I think tequila drinkers, people that regularly drink tequila, are well aware of Casa Dragones, but the general public, I think this is one that's still yet to be widely discovered. And
but it's a high end award winner.
What's that?
Tom?
Yeah. Tom, do you not hear that? Do it
that's
again.
Funny.
Do it again, Tom. Do it again.
What happened?
Tom was mixing it. He's pissed off, Phil. He's pissed off that he doesn't have any tequila. Now he's going to try to ruin the show. Okay.
I don't know. I don't know what happened.
That was really funny. Oh, podcasting in the Zoom era.
This is a tequila drinker's tequila. I don't know if I would give this to someone first thing if they never had tequila. Yep. This is, I appreciate, and I think you do, because we've had many kinds of tequila before.
Tom, would you call yourself a tequila drinker?
Phil actually introduced me much more to tequila, even though I used to work at a bar called El Rio Grande, and it was way back in the 80s. And in the 80s, nobody drank high-end tequila.
Nope.
There was about five. Dan, you would know. What were the big brands back
then?
Well,
I mean, I would say the very first premium tequila that started to be embraced in the United States was probably Patron. I mean, okay. What came before Patron? You had Cuervo. People used to think Cuervo Gold. Ooh, it's gold. No, that's not good.
Yeah, but Dan, it's just an indication of, you know, how there was Budweiser and a few other beers, and now it's a whole aisle of beers. I think for tequila, and especially with American knowledge, we just didn't know. We thought Cuervo Gold is nothing better than Cuervo Gold.
No. It's gold, Tom. It's gold.
And oh, Commemorativo. What was that? Sauza Commemorativo.
Yeah, Sauza was another big one. And they're, you know, they're all still around. These are, when you're going to Senor Frogs, or which is where Tom and I and Phil would be right now. If we could go out, we'd be at Senor Frogs doing belly button shots of tequila. You're going to get Sauza. You're going to get Cuervo. And I'm not knocking that, by the way. Cuervo really helped sustain the tequila business for a long time. But then you graduate. You graduate to the Casa Dragones of the world, and life's better here, I think.
I think Phil, I mean, Dan and Phil, just to for my experience, I worked in a Tex-Mex restaurant that specialized in Mexican food, and we had three tequilas. You know what I mean? That's an indicator of where we've come. You know, that was like in 85, 86, something.
No, the industry has really advanced since Patron.
100%. And again, this is not cheap. It's $150, but you know, what else are you spending money on these days, right?
Yes. If you love a spirit, it's worth investing in something, and it lasts a long time. It's not like wine where once you crack the bottle, you got to finish it in a day or two. This will be on the shelf.
Says you, Phil. It speaks to me. Drink me. So there are other brands out there. I mean, again, I like Patron. I like Fortaleza, although that's, you know,
beautiful. Fortaleza.
Most of the time you can get a good tequila in the $50 range. And I personally prefer, generally, I prefer unaged tequila because I really love the flavor of agave. So what ends up happening when you put it in wood is that it starts to extract the sweetness from the wood. It starts to extract that the oak, the influence of the oak into the tequila. And it doesn't always work. I think it works really well here in this one because, as Phil and I said earlier, subtle. But sometimes you can get that wood that just overpowers the agave, and I'm not getting the agave, in which case I'd rather just be drinking a whiskey. The wood is the single most important thing in a whiskey, the influence on it. Whereas with tequila, no. I mean, I would, this is one that this is an añejo I will drink. But generally, you know, I try to go with the younger whiskeys, or younger tequilas, excuse me, with no, by younger, I mean no barrel, no wood on it.
Does Casa Dragones, since my address got lost somehow, is Casa Dragones, do they have a lower price, you know, or are they all high end?
Well, this is their first añejo. So this is, the only añejo they have. I think their Blanco is probably in the $50 range, something like that. And then they've got a higher end. I have to look at it. Where's my research team? Research team. Oh, there we go. What do we got here? Yeah, we got sipping tequilas. That's it. The Blanco, the Joven. I think the Joven is expensive, though. It might be like $250.
Wow. And by the way, Phil, do you ever add ice to your... a lump of ice to your
never. I like it straight. Yeah.
What do you like to eat with tequila, Phil?
I'm afraid I like everything with it. I think it's really a drink of choice. I don't care if it's Mexican food or not. I'll especially have it if we're having Mexican food, but I like it anytime as a pre-dinner thing. And I only have one. I'm not like I'm a lightweight. By the way, I want to tout Herradura. I think they make a wonderful Blanco that's, I think, in the $30 range, and it is perfectly good for like an everyday thing.
You got to have your everyday sipping tequilas around too,
right? Yeah. So that's wonderful for people who want to experiment a little with that. And then their Reposado is really good, and their Añejo is really good. I think they're a great company. Dan, maybe you can help me. I would love to develop a tequila like George Clooney and then sell it for $1 billion. That's what I
Who like. Wouldn't want to do that?
Yes.
You know, and that's an interesting, you know, everybody's doing it. You know, The Rock just came out with a tequila.
Really?
He
did. Did you try it?
I haven't tried it yet. And is Michael Jordan's a tequila?
Really?
Michael Jordan just came out with something, and I think it's a tequila.
All right, he needs to stop.
Everybody's getting in the game. Look, I'm kind of surprised, Phil, that you do not have your own spirit in the works, right? And I'm not joking about that.
How do I do it? I don't know how to do it. I think I'd be perfect for it. Because I'm very enthusiastic about it. I love it. I think bonus people, call me. I'll help you. I have a good palate.
Would tequila be the spirit that you, if ideally, what would be the spirit and what would you call it?
Old Jew.
Hey, Phil, the head of your marketing team just wants to talk to you just for a second about the name of your tequila.
Only because I want to be able to yell across the liquor store. Excuse me. Guys, have any old Jew in here?
And that's Phil turns around guys. Every time.
Old Jew yeah. tequila.
By the way, Michael Jordan did launch a tequila. Yeah. So Phil, I think since you love tequila so much, and your brand is food and travel, and
yes.
So it just seems like a natural versus yes. Let's say a basketball player or an action yes. star. Or even Clooney. So I think Dan, if you could just reach out to Casa Dragones, let's table Old Jew for one, you know, just for the other names.
I'm not open to change.
See that you got to be able to collaborate, Phil, and that's probably your problem.
That's where I draw the line.
I think you're wrong on this, Tom. I think Old Jew would stand out, certainly. Yeah,
on a bar.
It would stand out on a bar. Well, listen, guys, it's always great to, I've kept you too long. I know it's 7 a.m. and Phil's trying to get to the rest of his tequila. I'm kidding. It's not 7 a.m. We wouldn't do that. It's all about responsible drinking here. There he goes. Taking off. Love having you guys on the show always. I look forward to the next one that we will hopefully be doing somewhere in person, sipping on that brand new Old Jew Añejo. From Phil Rosen. Are you gonna have your face on there, Phil? You gonna have the face on there?
Yeah, it'd be like this.
There it is. There it is.
That's old drunk Jew.
So something is like Phil said at the top of this segment. You got to have something to look forward to.
Yes, that's life.
And I'm looking forward to that for so many reasons. Yes. So many yeah. reasons. Am I looking forward to you developing that?
Phil, is your glass empty? Is your glass empty, Phil?
I finished it.
Oh, my goodness.
Wait, no.
Oh, my goodness. That's
there it is. Just crash it. So, Tom, we talked about Somebody Feed Phil, which is available now on Netflix, streaming the brand new season. You got to check it out. Tom, what do you got going on?
By the way, do you know what I'd love for people to go to just goes off of promoting Phil's show? I have an Instagram site called Everybody Loves Raymond 360.
Yes, and, it's great.
Yes, and a lot of fans of the show, you know, you don't know the person behind the show. You just think those are the actors and they kind of make their stuff up and then, you know, they win some Emmys. And so what I have found is because I took 30,000 behind the scene photos is Phil is in 29,000 of those photos because he's the showrunner and people don't even know what that means. So for someone like Larry David, you didn't know that Larry David worked on Seinfeld until he created Curb. He's just a guy in the background, you know, executive number 12 to the public who did something. And so just for if you go to Everybody's Raymond 360 Instagram, you'll see and we'll have Phil on, too. We do some live thing. But you see the world that was the show and food was so important to Phil at that time. That it was only a natural extension that he did, you know, Somebody Feed Phil.
Well, and you know, you mentioned that, Tom, how you come to know. I didn't know who Phil was either, except for seeing his name on the show. And then you did Exporting Raymond, where Phil was taking Everybody Loves Raymond to Russia, one of the great documentaries. And that's how I first came to know who Phil was watching that because, oh my goodness, like just What you got insulted? I think probably every 3 minutes or so on that in that documentary, they would say, "No, this isn't funny. This isn't funny."
Can I just jump in? Because that documentary, if you want to learn about show business, that documentary is so perfect for this reason, Dan. Because you know you're in show business, you're doing stuff. You know what it's like to pitch a show, and you're going there, and at every level, I don't care if you're George Clooney to the lowest, you know, level. A guy who has a drink podcast, let's just say you have
wait, to. That's sell. The lowest level.
Oh, sorry, assistant to guy who has drink my podcast. So you have to prove yourself. So even Clooney, it's all true. You know, Tom Cruise, you still have to pitch and sell your idea. So you see Phil, who's going to Russia, who's already proven that this show works for 9 years, wins Emmys, and is loved by people. Now he goes to Russia. And they just shit on him from beginning to end. And you know it's so enjoyable because you know it'll work. It's and when you're pitching normally, Dan, when you're saying, I have a show idea, people are, you don't know because you don't know if it's going to work. And people are, so they're betting on you. There's no risk to bet on Phil. And yet nonstop punishment of Phil for caring and trying.
It's I can't joy. Tell you how my family laughed at this.
You know, look, everybody knows when it comes to comedy, the preeminent authority in the world are the Russians. They're just funny people. I mean, that's all we can say. So Phil, hopefully you took something away from that experience moving forward.
Yes, I now go to other countries.
Go to other countries. And watch Phil go to other countries on Somebody Feeds Phil on Netflix. And check out Everybody Loves Raymond 360 on the Instagram, Tom Caltabiano and Phil Rosenthal. Great having you guys here. And thank you so much for doing this, as always.
Love seeing you guys. Next time in person.
Thank you, Dan.
Support for What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn comes from Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Listen, folks. When it comes to dating, it's a jungle out there. But when you do find someone who wants to take you home, you better make sure it's not a jungle down there. That's why I use Manscaped, a revolutionary electric trimmer that makes accidents a thing of the past. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag your nuts. Take my word on this. No, seriously, you don't want to Google snag your nuts. It's going to take you down a dark road. Another reason to get Manscaped is that you don't want to use the same trimmer on your face as you're using on your balls. That's just nasty. Oh, and Manscaped also has the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why not use it on the smelliest part of your body? Get 20% off and free shipping with the code DRINKING at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code DRINKING. And always use the right tools for the job. Always use Manscaped. Your balls will thank you. Joining me now, she is the co-founder and CEO of Tequila Casa Dragones, Berta Gonzalez Nieves. Did I say that right?
Very well.
How are you?
Very good. And you, Dan?
I'm doing all right. It's good to see you. I wish we were doing this in person, but this is going to be all right here. We'll do it virtually. You're coming to us from New York now, right?
I'm in New York right now, and I'm super excited to see you virtually and to catch up with you.
Where are you based normally?
I divide my time between Mexico City and New York City and Tequila Jalisco. So we're producing tequila, and then we have an office in Mexico City to manage our business in Mexico, and an office in New York to manage our business in the U.S.
Now, tell me a little bit about Casa Dragones. How did the brand come about?
So I founded Casa Dragones together with Bob Pittman, who's a very well-known American entrepreneur, founder of MTV. And
What's it called?
Bob Pittman.
MTV?
MTV.
I was around for that. Come on. There's no music on MTV anymore, but yeah. It's all teen moms and challenges. But yeah, I grew up on MTV.
When MTV was a cult, you know, really.
What was the very little trivia for you here, Berta? What was the first video ever played on MTV?
You are going to catch me off guard right there. But it was not I Want My MTV.
No, I mean, that's a that's one that was Dire Straits, which was a big, with Sting singing that part. But the very first video ever played on MTV was Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles. Fitting.
Epic song.
Yes. Anyway. Well,
you can only imagine, you know, in Mexico, actually growing up in Mexico, to get MTV, you can only get it on satellite because it was prohibited given the content on open TV. So it was only on satellite TV. So we had to congregate in houses in Mexico to go and see someone that had a satellite so we can all sit down and watch MTV.
To watch it.
So exciting for me to actually meet Bob in an unexpected party in Williamsburg and be talking to the founder of MTV, and then realized after months of discussing that we truly had a common mission in the tequila category of actually being part of the producers that are truly innovating, making tequila in a different way, and delivering extraordinary sipping tequilas.
And you came from Cuervo, right? Originally, before?
Yeah.
Okay. What was your, what were you doing there at Cuervo?
So I actually worked for the Beckman family at that time, and they owned one of the largest, actually the largest portfolio of tequilas. And one of the brands was Cuervo, but also they had 1800. They had a joint venture with Don Julio and so on and so forth. So I worked for them for more than a decade. And I had very key roles. I started with them in the Mexican market, managing their portfolio of tequila there, and then came to open their global marketing office in New York to manage their business globally, and had very great roles from global director of innovation and new business development to commercial director of North America, and really had the opportunity to learn the business from within in a family-run business and pretty much a company that has shares the history of the company, shares the history of the tequila category. So by being there, I continue to hone in my passion and my interest for the category.
And obviously, being at a company like Cuervo, you learned the business inside out. So then around 2009, you launched Casa Dragones?
Yeah, so we founded the company in January 2008. And then we started the first tequila we brought to market. We started selling it in mid of 2009, and it was Casa Dragones Joven, which is our first sipping tequila that is a blend of a white tequila with a 5-year-old extra aged tequila, and it's made for sipping and pairing with food.
Now, the Joven is not an inexpensive tequila, correct?
No, it's not.
So what was your, when you first came out with it, I'm bringing this up because I remember a little bit of blowback when you first came out. I mean, it was over $200, right? Or in that range. What went into that decision to go that high? And obviously it's paid off for you, but there must have been a little bit of trepidation at that point is to come into the market with a new tequila priced as high as it was.
In the middle of that 2009 economical crisis.
Yeah.
So we set on a quest to produce a true sipping tequila that paired well with food. And our idea is to showcase the craftsmanship of Mexico and prove that tequila as a category has all the credentials, and Mexico has the attention to detail in craftsmanship to be able to compete with other sipping spirits. Cognac, single malts, you know, some of the categories that are at the highest echelon of the spirits industry. So we were focused on delivering something truly unique of extraordinary quality. And that's how we ended up at $275, you know, like from the decisions that we took in meticulous attention to detail in the quality of our agaves, in the way that we produce, and in how we bottle our products. It's bottled in a lead-free crystal bottle, produced in a semi-automatic process that's individually hand-engraved and so on and so forth. So we were born in 2009 with a high-end product in the middle of a very difficult recession. So I remember going to sell into accounts in New York and people saying, well, you speak very good English, but are you reading the news? You know, like we're living one of the hardest recessions in the history of American economy. And we sold so little that we counted in bottles rather than counting in cases.
Sure.
So that gave us the opportunity, we survived that and gave us the opportunity to truly get to know our clients and our consumer. And we had the patience to really build the business one bottle at a time. So we sold that product for the first 5 years of the company. And that's the only thing we sold in Mexico and the US.
So now the brand has obviously persevered, and you're doing great to the point where you've now brought out a brand new product, your first Añejo tequila right here, right?
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about this barrel blend.
So we're really excited. So we really believe in the power of focus. So for the first 5 years, we brought our Joven to market, which is an overlooked style in the tequila category. Then we brought our Blanco tequila. That the objective of that tequila is to expose the purity of our agave through an ultra-modern process. It makes a very beautiful Blanco tequila that's, you can explore it. It's very green, very herbaceous, and it's beautiful to serve on the rocks or in signature cocktails. And with our Añejo, after really 10 years of producing those two styles, many of our clients and customers and friends were saying, well, when are you going to come out with a truly distinct Añejo? You know, when are you going to have the chance to actually bring something aged? And then we gave ourselves the opportunity and the time to be able to go and explore how could we bring that too smooth style that Casa Dragones is known for in an Añejo tequila. We want to continue truly bringing tequilas to market that are sipping tequilas that people can actually sip and savor. And the idea was that we went to interview a lot of different cooperages around the world. And we found this incredible family-run cooperage in the heart of Bordeaux that works mostly with French wines and fell in love with this particular wood in the heart of Bordeaux called Cecile wood. And so it's a very much lighter wood than the French Limousine. And then as well, this American oak out of Missouri and Pennsylvania. So what we did is we custom made two different types of casks with custom toasting. And the idea of this Añejo tequila is that the tequila is actually pushing through the wood. It's really like using the wood more as caressing the tequila, but really the tequila owning the final approach to the taste of the product, rather than the wood really overcoming the more herbaceous, more floral notes of the tequila, is really that tequila pushing through. That's why it's aged for a little bit more than 12 months. And what you're getting in terms of the results is a very beautiful herbaceous floral tequila that does have these very beautiful fig notes, cacao notes, macadamia notes, and even almond notes that are very traditional in an aged tequila, but in a very well-balanced, very complex way.
You're making me thirsty here, Berta. So I think we should, we've really screwed up here by not raising a toast. We're 10 minutes in and we haven't had a sip yet. Now let's remedy that right now.
I agree with you.
And, here you go.
Here we go.
You're gonna walk us through this. Let's do it. Okay.
Let's do it. So the first thing that I'm gonna bring to your attention are the visual characteristics of Casa Dragones Añejo. So these are new oak, right? So we wanted to like really let the product explore the color. We don't criticize other practices, but we don't believe in adding additional color or wood chips or anything to our process. So what you get here is almost it's a light caramel color with bright hues. It almost looks like a Chardonnay.
It really does.
Very, very beautiful color. And also you can look at the walls of the glass and you can notice that the tequila has long and pronounced legs. So because it's a sipping tequila, we want to make sure that the visual characteristics and the body characteristics, how the product actually embraces your palate, plays a very important role in the experience of taste. The aroma is fresh and floral, very much in line with a Casa Dragones family, with pear notes of figs and almonds. So you get these pear notes that are very traditional to the agave Azul Tequilana Weber, and then you start getting these figs and almonds that come from the wood.
Yeah, I am getting that.
And then the taste, we can taste now, finally.
I was going to say, let's get to this, huh? Salud. It's been a rough couple months. I'd like to try to get some liquor in me as quickly as possible.
I'm with you.
It's a, oh man, that's delicious.
Traditionally in a professional tasting, you have a neutral grain spirit and then you start with a tasting. So the first sip and the second sip, the first sip is not that big of a reflection on how the product tastes like. It's more of the second and the third sip.
You're priming your palate with that first
sip. Correct. So the taste has beautiful notes of macadamia, nutmeg, and blackberry. And the finish is a long, round finish that has a very beautiful lingering permanence in your palate that leaves some notes of cacao and spicy black pepper.
Just fantastic.
And the idea of the finish of the product and the taste, it's actually the product itself is inviting you to sip and savor. That's why we truly believe in showcasing tequila in a different light. In this añejo, you're going to find much less sweet notes of many of our colleagues that are in the marketplace that do extraordinary tequilas in this part of the shelf. What we want to showcase is a more dry style, a very complex and very well-balanced style that has some of those floral and more raw agave notes, really caressed with that fig and almond and macadamia notes that the wood is bringing to deliver a profile of añejo tequila that's really bringing new news to that part of the shelf.
Now, was there any apprehension on your part about bringing out this product right now? Because things ain't normal.
No, they are not. We were all ready to go to introduce this product in April. And then given the different crises that we're living today, we also had to install and implement a new protocol in our production in tequila, in our distillery. So what we did is we had to slow down, basically, and have a whole
for the social distancing and all that, making sure that everybody's safe down there.
So we also didn't feel that slowed down our production, and we also didn't feel there was a time to talk about a new product anywhere.
And by the way, Berto, just to jump in here real quick, I need people to understand, because I'm going to guess a lot of people have not been to a distillery, maybe not seen a bottling line, and you know, it's a real challenge, I got to imagine, because normally, especially on the bottling line, everybody is right on top of each other. They're right next to each other. And to sort of adjust to the new reality, it's got to I can't imagine. What does that slow down production by?
By 50%.
By 50%.
Yeah. And we compared notes with colleagues in Italy, in Spain, in the US, in Mexico to like compare protocols and figure out what was going to be the right protocol for the size of our organization and so on. And the most important thing was to implement a protocol that was going to protect our team and that was going able to continue to produce, because we're a small batch producer. So our batches are no larger than 500 cases per batch. So that really gives us...
Put that in perspective, by the way. So coming from Cuervo, what's a batch at Cuervo?
I mean, I won't be able to talk about what Cuervo does, but just to put it in perspective, I mean, a production for us of 2,000 9-liter cases of the big boys, you know, the leaders in the tequila category, they produce 2 million or 3 million cases.
It's just a completely different galaxy.
Yes.
It's a different universe.
So yeah. We believe in the power of focus and the core of our business. We're in the business of taste. We're not in the business of volume. So by making small batches, it enables us as a producer to focus on a small quantity and be laser focused attention to produce extraordinary quality. I love to always compare the dinner for 12 that you do in your house, and you're going to buy the pasta from your friend that does pasta fresh, and you go and get your pine nuts from your friend that is importing them from India, and you know, whatever the process is that you decide to do versus the party for 500 people, you need to make very different decisions. So so with this particular situation, we were able to continue with our production. And at this point, because of our size of our company, we were able to also export to the US and have our first batches for the Mexican market. And at this point, given our size, it's important for us to sell what we produce. So we're going to continue to work closely with all of our retail partners that have been incredible partners to us since we started. And we're going to move forward with introducing the product with all that.
And this is just happening now. Like this is hot off the presses. You know, this is
I mean, the bottle that we sent to you is if you can read what it says on your label,
gone.
It's probably it's probably batch one or two. What does it say? So you have
batch one.
Are you bottle number?
Look at me, all special. 3904.
Yeah.
Which bottle number do you have?
And I have 3978.
Oh, so I'm higher up the chain. Look at me. I'm feeling special now.
It's special. I mean, it's our first batch, so I hopefully you'll keep it.
Too late on that. I'm already halfway through the not on this episode, but I mean, we did it with Phil Rosenthal. We had a little bit of it too, and then I may have had a little after the recording with Phil Rosenthal. It's a really nice tequila to just sit back and kick it. And obviously the way we consume alcohol when we're not in a pandemic is different when you're out and but there is something about it right now I'm finding with sipping spirits that as opposed necessarily to a cocktail, because a cocktail makes me want to go out, especially a tequila cocktail. I want to be out. I want to be at a party. So I've had to sort of tailor my drinking strategy to the new reality. And a big part of that is sipping spirits, stuff that I can just chill out on my sofa, watching Netflix, praying that whatever the hell else the universe is going to throw at us isn't too bad. And getting wrapped up in the warm embrace of a fantastic tequila like this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that space right now of people actually really choosing, what they're drinking and choosing, a lot of people want to be choosing and knowing more about the producer that they choose to explore. And for us, if we can provide the journey of taste and you can really truly like enjoy what we're doing, for us, we've done our job. For us, we want to find people out there that enjoy our product as much as we enjoy producing it.
Well, I'm in that camp. I want to thank you, Berta, for coming on to the show and for sending me tequila. Really thanking you for that one. It is Tequila Casa Dragones barrel blend, brand new, hot off the... Do you know what the retail is on this thing?
$150.
A steal, right? What else you spending your money on these days? You're not going to the clubs. You're not taking vacations. So treat yourself. Really, treat yourself. It feels good. Drop $150 on this bottle of tequila, and I guarantee you, you won't be disappointed.
Well, thank you for all your interest throughout time, Dan. I really appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me on the show. I'm excited to see you well and see you excited about life and always showcasing that passion for our industry. So in the name of everyone in the spirits industry, thank you for your blog. Thank you for your podcast. And thank you for your passion for the spirits industry. We appreciate it very much.
Well, you're welcome. And I know I deserve these plaudits. No, I'm kidding. again, I want to thank Berta Gonzalez Nieves for joining us on the show. And we'll be right back after this word. These words? This word? Oh, I've had some tequila. Words? Sentences? From our sponsor. My friends, can I be straight with you? Right now is not the time to overpay for razors at the drugstore. In fact, you shouldn't be going to drugstores at all if you can avoid it. Harry's knows this. That's why they ship directly to you so you can experience the quality of a Harry's shave in just a few days from the convenience and safety of your own home. Why Harry's? Well, it's a return to the essential. Quality, durable blades at a fair price. We're talking $2 a blade. They've cut out the middleman. Harry's uses a German manufacturer that's been honing precision blades for a century. Those high-quality blades go straight from the factory to you with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know, and they'll give you a full refund. So I've got an offer for you. Got a little deal. I'll make you a deal. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's, and listeners to my show, What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, can redeem their Harry's trial at harrys.com/drinking. That's harrys.com/drinking. Redeem it. You're going to get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor the lubricating strip and trimmer blade, some rich lathering shave gel with aloe, keeps your skin nice and hydrated, very important, and a travel blade cover, keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Because eventually you're going to get to go somewhere again, I promise. So go to harrys.com/drinking to start shaving better today. On Thursday, June 18th, I'm going to be doing a Nightcap Live with, yes, Phil Rosenthal. I love Phil. I can't get enough of him. Nightcap Live, of course, the thing I do every week on Flaviar's YouTube channel. Go there to check it out Thursday, June 18th. We're starting at a new time this week, 9 p.m. Eastern. So from 9 to 10, I'll be rapping with Phil live on Flaviar. We'll be giving away prizes. Please tune in. Also on Thursday, June 18th, I'll be showcasing some whiskey on the Adam Carolla Show. So check that out as well. Remind you, if you dig this podcast, please take a minute to give us a rating and review, particularly on Apple Podcasts. It really helps. It really does. And spread the word about the show on your social media. I would love you if you do that. And if you let me know about it at The Imbiber on Instagram or Twitter, I promise I'll give you a shout out on the show. Let your friends know about what we're drinking. Now, before we go, the other night I rewatched the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory film. And I got to tell you, it really made me feel good. Cheered me up something proper. I think we need to do that as much as we can these days. Engage in activities that lift our spirits instead of just reading all the bad news being thrown our way and getting sucked into the morass of the 24-hour news cycle. There's one line from Willy Wonka that everyone knows. After Wonka, who was played by the late, great Gene Wilder, invites his guest to sample the lickable wallpaper where the snozzberries taste like snozzberries, the famously spoiled Veruca Salt sneers, "Snozzberries? Who ever heard of a snozzberry?" That's when Wonka takes her face in his hands and with great intensity says, "We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams." That happens to be the opening line of British poet Arthur O'Shaughnessy's Ode for Music and Moonlight back in 1874. Over the years, it's been sampled for songs, books, and even appropriated by the Church of Scientology. Anyone who considers this among their favorite quotes should definitely check out O'Shaughnessy's entire poem. Again, it's called Ode. But the quote that jumped out as most apropos to this show is one that Wonka borrowed from another famous wordsmith, Ogden Nash, from a poem entitled Reflections on Icebreaking. And it's the thought I'll leave you with today, my friends. Candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker.